Chapter 100. It is observable that, to this day, large numbers of elderly ladies and gentlemen who have been disappointed in procuring partners, and almost as many young ones who are anxious to obtain them, repair annually to Bath to drink the waters, from which they derive much strength and comfort. This is most complimentary to the virtue of Prince Bladud's tears, and strongly corroborative of the veracity of this legend. Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick yawned several times, when he had arrived at the end of this little manuscript, carefully refolded, and replaced it in the inkstand drawer, and then, with a countenance expressive of the utmost weariness, lighted his chamber candle, and went upstairs to bed. He stopped at Mr. Dowler's door, according to custom, and knocked to say good night. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Dowler, going to bed? I wish I was. Dismal night. Windy, isn't it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, very, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. Good night. Apostrophe, good night. Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick went to his bedchamber, and Mr. Dowler resumed his seat before the fire, in fulfillment of his rash promise to sit up till his wife came home. There are few things more worrying than sitting up for somebody, especially if that somebody be at a party. You cannot help thinking how quickly the time passes with them, which drags so heavily with you, and the more you think of this, the more your hopes of their speedy arrival decline. Clocks tick so loud too, when you are sitting up alone, and you seem as if you had an undergarment of cobwebs on. First, something tickles your right knee, and then the same sensation irritates your left. You have no sooner changed your position, than it comes again in the arms. When you have fidgeted your limbs into all sorts of queer shapes, you have a sudden relapse in the nose, which you rub, as if to rub it off, as there is no doubt you would, if you could. Eyes, too, are mere personal inconveniences, and the wick of one candle gets an inch and a half long, while you are snuffing the other. These, and various other little nervous annoyances, render sitting up for a length of time, after everybody else has gone to bed, anything but a cheerful amusement. This was just Mr. Dowler's opinion, as he sat before the fire, and felt honestly indignant with all the inhuman people at the party who were keeping him up. He was not put into better humor either, by the reflection, that he had taken it into his head, early in the evening, to think he had got an ache there, and so stopped at home. At length, after several droppings asleep, and fallings forward towards the bars, and catchings backward soon enough to prevent being branded in the face, Mr. Dowler made up his mind that he would throw himself on the bed in the back room, and think not sleep, of course. I'm a heavy sleeper, apostrophe said Mr. Dowler, as he flung himself on the bed. I must keep awake. I suppose I shall hear a knock here. Yes. I thought so. I can hear the watchman. There he goes. Fainter now, though. A little fainter. He's turning the corner. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, when Mr. Dowler arrived at this point, he turned the corner at which he had been long hesitating, and fell fast asleep. Just as the clock struck three, there was blown into the crescent a sedan chair with Mrs. Dowler inside, borne by one short, fat chairman, and one long, thin one, who had had much ado to keep their bodies perpendicular. To say nothing of the chair. But on that high ground, and in the crescent, which the wind swept round and round, as if it were going to tear the paving stones up, its fury was tremendous. They were very glad to set the chair down, and give a good round loud double knock at the street door. They waited some time, but nobody came. Servants is in the arms o' porpoise, I think, apostrophe said the short chairman, warming his hands at the attendant link boy's torch. I wish he'd give him a squeeze and wake him, apostrophe observed the long one. Knock again, will you, if you please, apostrophe cried Mrs. Dowler from the chair. Knock two or three times, if you please. Apostrophe, the short man was quite willing to get the job over, as soon as possible, So he stood on the step, and gave four or five most startling double knocks, of 8 or 10 knocks apiece, while the long man went into the road, and looked up at the windows for a light. Nobody came. It was all as silent, and dark as ever. Dear me. ... said Mrs. Dowler. You must knock again, if you please. ... There ain't a bell, is there, ma'am? ... said the short chairman. Yes, there is, ... interposed the link boy. I've been a-ringing at it ever so long. ... It's only a handle, ... said Mrs. Dowler. The wire's broken. ... I wish the servants heads woes, ... growled the long man. I must trouble you to knock again, if you please, ... said Mrs. Dowler, with the utmost politeness. The short man did knock again several times, without producing the smallest effect. The tall man, growing very impatient, then relieved him, and kept on perpetually knocking double knocks of 2 loud knocks each, like an insane postman. At length Mr. Winkle began to dream that he was at a club, and that the members being very refractory, the chairman was obliged to hammer the table a good deal to preserve order. Then he had a confused notion of an auction room, where there were no bidders, and the auctioneer was buying everything in, and ultimately he began to think it just within the bounds of possibility that somebody might be knocking at the street door. To make quite certain, however, he remained quiet in bed for 10 minutes or so, and listened. And when he had counted 2 or 3 and 30 knocks, he felt quite satisfied, and gave himself a great deal of credit for being so wakeful. Rap, 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 rah, 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 rap. ... went the knocker. Mr. Winkle jumped out of bed, wondering very much what could possibly be the matter, and hastily putting on his stockings and slippers, folded his dressing gown round him, lighted a flat candle from the rushlight that was burning in the fireplace, and hurried downstairs. "Here's somebody coming at last, ma'am," ... said the short chairman. "I wish I was behind him with a brattle," ... muttered the long one. "Who's there?" ... cried Mr. Winkle, undoing the chain. "Don't stop to ask questions, cast iron head," ... replied the long man, with great disgust, taking it for granted that the inquirer was a footman, but opened the door. ... "Come, look sharp, timber eyelids," ... added the other encouragingly. Mr. Winkle, being half asleep, obeyed the command mechanically, opened the door a little, and peeped out. The first thing he saw was the red glare of the link boy's torch. Startled by the sudden fear that the house might be on fire, he hastily threw the door wide open, and holding the candle above his head, stared eagerly before him, not quite certain whether what he saw was a sedan chair or a fire engine. At this instant there came a violent gust of wind. The light was blown out. Mr. Winkle felt himself irresistibly impelled onto the steps, and the door blew to with a loud crash. "Well, young man, now you have done it," ... said the short chairman. Mr. Winkle, catching sight of a lady's face at the window of the sedan, turned hastily round, plied the knocker with all his might and main, and called frantically upon the chairman to take the chair away again. "Take it away, take it away," ... cried Mr. Winkle. "Here's somebody coming out of another house. Put me into the chair. Hide me. Do something with me." All this time he was shivering with cold, and every time he raised his hand to the knocker, the wind took the dressing gown in a most unpleasant manner. "The people are coming down the crescent now. There are ladies with them. Cover me up with something. Stand before me," roared Mr. Winkle. But the chairmen were too much exhausted with laughing to afford him the slightest assistance, and the ladies were every moment approaching nearer and nearer. Mr. Winkle gave a last hopeless knock. The ladies were only a few doors off. He threw away the extinguished candle, which, all this time he had held above his head, and fairly bolted into the sedan chair where Mrs. Dowler was. Now, Mrs. Craddock had heard the knocking, and the voices at last, and, only waiting to put something smarter on her head than her nightcap, ran down into the front drawing room to make sure that it was the right party. Throwing up the window sash as Mr. Winkle was rushing into the chair, she no sooner caught sight of what was going forward below than she raised a vehement and dismal shriek, and implored Mr. Dowler to get up directly, for his wife was running away with another gentleman. Upon this, Mr. Dowler bounced off the bed as abruptly as an india rubber ball, and rushing into the front room, arrived at one window just as Mr. Pickwick threw up the other, when the first object that met the gaze of both was Mr. Winkle bolting into the sedan chair. "Watchman!" shouted Dowler furiously. "Stop him, hold him, keep him tight, shut him in, till I come down. I'll cut his throat, give me a knife from ear to ear, Mrs. Craddock, I will." And breaking from the shrieking landlady, and from Mr. Pickwick, the indignant husband seized a small supper knife, and tore into the street. But Mr. Winkle didn't wait for him. He no sooner heard the horrible threat of the valorous Dowler, than he bounced out of the sedan, quite as quickly as he had bounced in, and throwing off his slippers into the road, took to his heels, and tore round the crescent, hotly pursued by Dowler and the watchman. He kept ahead. The door was open as he came round the second time. He rushed in, slammed it in Dowler's face, mounted to his bedroom, locked the door, piled a washhand stand, chest of drawers, and a table against it, and packed up a few necessaries ready for flight with the first ray of morning. Dowler came up to the outside of the door, avowed, through the keyhole, his steadfast determination of cutting Mr. Winkle's throat next day, and, after a great confusion of voices in the drawing room, amidst which that of Mr. Pickwick was distinctly heard endeavoring to make peace, the inmates dispersed to their several bedchambers, and all was quiet once more. It is not unlikely that the inquiry may be made where Mr. Weller was all this time. We will state where he was in the next Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.